The Bundesliga Diaries are back for September to discuss Leverkusen cutting their losses, Köln bringing a surprise, and transfer business galore. Hello and welcome to the September episode of the Bundesliga Diaries, the first monthly review of the 25-26 season in the studio with Richard and Mirko. Lads, how are we? Enjoyed the start of the season?
It's been all right.
Yeah.
A few ups
yeah.
and downs.
Bit of many games, Richard, you mean you got to?
The Stuttgart home game and the Hoffenheim home game so far.
Good to be back.
Yeah, always.
Mirko, we'll get to Frankfurt in more detail, obviously, but you enjoyed it, opening a few weeks of the season?
So-and-so. I didn't like our performances in some games, which we won. And obviously, I didn't like the performance this week. But, I mean, it's all right. There have been quite some upsets and stuff. And
there's been some great goals.
I still think there's a lot in it for Frankfurt this year. Just need to stabilize a bit. So I didn't lose all hopes on over the weekend.
Wow, that is a surprise. I was expecting different.
He's had a few days to digest the results.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if we'd have recorded this a few days ago, it might be a different attitude.
Friday night game, wasn't it, of course? It gives you the most amount of time possible to get over it. Outside of the Bundesliga, we'll get into that in due course, but the European draws have been complete for the league phase of the Champions League, Europa League and Conference League. Of course, now, the way the draw's done just kind of takes the fun a little bit out of it, just pulling out the teams.
Yeah,
you've got your eight
games.
The draw
is completely boring. Because
you guys watched it or something? What? I mean,
I had to do it for work.
Oh, okay.
So that was why I had to watch it. But it's like,
I was also following it. I mean, because I want to know the opponents.
True.
But you don't really get the dates of the fixtures until Saturday. So it doesn't really make sense. But obviously, when you're playing Champions League for the second time, you kind of want to know the teams you're playing. But it's absolutely ridiculous. And I mean, since they do rig the majority of what they're doing, with the way they're doing it now, it's obviously rigged. So,
that's the thing. Now with it just being like a computer, it does it all behind the scenes.
The algorithm did this.
Yeah.
And it's like, but I mean, they do real draws afterwards, huh? When it's a round of 16, then they do real draws.
Warm balls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Insane.
They always find ways to make the most marketable games for TV.
Yes.
But I mean, if you want to win it, you still need to beat everyone. So technically it's possible for everyone, but just some teams have more advantages than others.
On the whole, it feels like, I mean, we concentrate on the German side, obviously, but it feels like the games in the league phase this year are a lot more difficult than they were last year on paper. Maybe that's just me. But if I look at Bayern, kick off with Chelsea, then you've got PSG, Club Brugge and Arsenal, Sporting Lisbon, PSV, Saint-Gilloise and Paphos. I mean, Chelsea, PSG, Arsenal there. Sporting, PSV are a decent size as well. Mirko, I do feel for Frankfurt because it really is a difficult one for you guys. Liverpool, Barcelona, Atalanta, Atletico Madrid, Tottenham, Napoli, Galatasaray, and then Karabag. So you've got to nail that one as a win.
Yeah, it seems tough, but I take it as a bonus this year. Because the goal number one is, since the transfer window kind of ruined most of the other clubs in the Bundesliga, the goal is Champions League. Get into the top four again. That has to be the goal. And anything that happens in the Champions League is the bonus. Unless we completely mess up like Leipzig and lose the first six games in a row or whatever they did. But the majority of international seasons, we had the best games in the international games. Because all the players, all the staff, all the fans are so hyped for it. And Champions League, they're definitely going to be hyped again. I mean, Conference League, maybe they had some poorer performances. It was also the first year of Topmüller. But everyone will be hyped. And I don't really know when I know they play Liverpool fairly early on the third match day. But then if they play Barcelona, for example, on match day 7, when they were already through, they could get at least a point.
I mean, Galatasaray to kick off, isn't it?
Galatasaray is to kick off, and that is the game with the most pressure, I would say. Because if you don't win this, then getting out of the group stage will be difficult.
Yeah, it's an absolute must win.
But, I mean, it doesn't matter. If they don't get out, they don't get out. But, I mean, 24 out of the 36. So there's a chance. And then, I mean, other teams, I reckon Paphos, for example, who are playing Bayern. Then Karabakh. Bodo Glimt, maybe Copenhagen, also not the strongest team. There are teams who also get beaten a lot. So I reckon, how many points did we need last season? 8 or 9 to get out of the group?
If I remember rightly, it was 10.
10?
11.
11 in the end. Yeah. Okay, so
Dinamo Zagreb actually went out on 11 on goal difference.
3 wins, 2 draws then.
I reckon 10, 11, yeah, in that area, which will be difficult. Then again, why not beat Napoli? Why not beat Madrid? Why not get a point against Liverpool at home?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I mean, Burnley almost got a point at home against Liverpool.
I mean, you are playing 5 champions and the Europa League winners as well in the group stage.
That is tough, that is.
I mean, I don't know if you fancy a trip to Baku, but that might be a little bit of a stretch. And the other 3 you got your eye on?
That might be the only game where it's possible to get tickets. I was looking at the Madrid game, but then, I mean, flights are already so expensive that I didn't even bother applying for the ticket. That would have been the only game, the Atletico Madrid, which would be the 2nd match day. So away, I won't do any games, maybe round of 16, quarterfinal, semifinal, something like that.
The final this year, Murphy?
But is it in Warsaw?
Where is it? Yeah, where is the final this year?
I don't really know. But I will be doing the home game against Liverpool.
Nice.
So easy 3 points.
Yeah, the partner's in Budapest, so not the worst place to go.
That would be decent, but I reckon the chances are
slim.
0.0%, something like that.
Reunion with Eka Tike as well. From Liverpool. Be interesting to see how he gets on. He started well in the Premier League, so should be, I mean, be welcome back.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's just too good. And yeah, it's just interesting. Maybe he stays good at Liverpool. I mean, the start was decent, but a lot of other strikers, even Muani, haven't been performing so well after they moved. But yeah, Etiquette had a decent start.
Dortmund's eye-catching games against Inter at home, Man City away, Juve away, Tottenham away, Athletic Club at home as well, one of the stronger teams in the last pot. Still feel like Dortmund haven't got it too bad. Leverkusen perhaps got the best draw of the lot, PSG and Man City, but if you look at the other 6, you'd feel like they're all winnable. Villarreal, Benfica, PSV, Olympiacos, Newcastle and Copenhagen. If they could get their act together, which we don't worry, we will be discussing Leverkusen in this episode, then yeah, perhaps they can put on a decent run. How many do we see getting through, guys?
As in, what, finishing in the top 24? Or
yeah. Well, let's 20. Say, I mean, let's say both then. At least making the playoffs first.
I mean, I would say it's just hard to differentiate because like 8th, 9th, 10th, you never know where you end up. I'd just say top 24. There will be, yeah, around 3 teams. Bayern will go through, even though their draw is difficult. Leverkusen, I reckon, will get through because of the weakest draw. And then either Dortmund or Frankfurt, one will do it. But, I mean, the chances for Dortmund are way, way higher.
I think, I'd say Dortmund comfortably. I mean, I'd say the top 2 are probably the, you know, Bayern and Dortmund are probably the most comfortable. I think Leverkusen's draw helps them, gives them a good enough run at it, and I think they'll also make it. Frankfurt are up against it with the teams they have to play. It's a really difficult run of set of fixtures. If you don't beat Galatasaray, then I already think that it's going to be difficult from that point onwards. So the first game is going to be really important. 3 teams to go through, for sure, I think, and then I think one of them might not get it.
I would say the chances that Frankfurt don't get through are higher than them getting through. But, I mean, I don't mind. If you play those teams, you have a great season. And then, as I said before, the goal is to reach Champions League again. And anything else, I don't really care.
There's another way to do that as well. Just win it.
Yeah. I mean, it would be easier winning the Europa League.
No drop down this year, unfortunately. Europa League draw. Nice that you mention it. Stuttgart and Freiburg are the representatives in that one. Freiburg, Salzburg at home. Lille away. Tel Aviv at home. Pilsen away, Basel at home, Nice away, Utrecht at home, and Bologna away.
That is a cracking draw, especially if you look at the away games.
Yes, nice away.
Really nice away games. Yeah. I would say the best draw any German team has, considering the away trips.
I would agree with you. And then Stuttgart, I've got Feyenoord at home, Roma away, Maccabi Tel Aviv at home, Fenerbahce away, Young Boys at home, Basel away, Celta Vigo at home, and Go Ahead Eagles away. Also feels like a nicest draw. Freiburg, how they've started the season. Again, we will talk about them as well. But, you know, there's been some positives more recent and then quite a few negatives.
Are you saying Stuttgart has better chances of going through?
It feels like it, yeah.
But then Freiburg is automatically qualified. They beat Stuttgart. So yeah. They're better.
If only it was as simple as that.
I would say they both go through.
I think they
both established a good squad in the recent years. They played good football in all the last 3, 4, 5 seasons. I don't see them crack that much. The quality is there. Mm. They are getting out of the group stage easy.
I like your confidence, Mirko. And what about the Conference League with Mainz in it? They... well, just about made it in, lost the first leg of the Conference League playoff to Rosenborg. Great second performance, 1-4-1. That 4-1 win has been pretty much the only positive from their point of view this season so far. Did get through in the cup, but wasn't pretty. And 1 point from the first 3 games. Yeah, a poor start for them, especially because it's last season. They've got Fiorentina, Lech Poznan, Omonoia, Zrinski, Samsunspor, and Craiova. As I would like to consider myself a football connoisseur.
How many have you heard of?
Honestly, there are two teams there that I've absolutely never heard of before. Samsunspor and Zrinski, I couldn't tell you.
You know Craiova?
Yeah, the Romanian team. It's a name I've come across. I'm sure they've been in it before. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I actually don't know the Zrinski. I genuinely don't think I could tell you what league they play in.
Croatia.
Okay,
fair enough. Croatian league. But again, that's only by checking.
I don't watch that often.
Omonoia Cyprus. Again, they're pretty regular. They're regulars in the Conference League. Then Lech Poznan and Fiorentina, obviously. But a trip to Romania, trip to Cyprus, trip to Poland. Again, quite also a nice little away day draw from Mainz, you'd think. I don't know what the capacity of the stadiums are. So I think Poznan, they'd probably be relatively not easy to get a ticket, but you got a chance. The other two, I couldn't tell you. Mainz, will they get through?
Considering I've never heard of some of the teams, I feel a bit awkward trying to give a prediction, but...
Yes.
So if you've never heard of them, you think they're really, really good or might be good enough. Well, if Mainz get it together, they're easily going through.
I just can't see them like... I mean, come on.
Also, you predicted them to win, so...
Yeah, exactly. They have to get through.
Yeah.
They're going to go down and win the Conference League. I mean,
oh yeah, of course. I forgot your prediction. Yeah, well, then you best stick with that.
I need all German teams to get through, really, just to hedge the bet to give me half decent chance. Also, I've had the totality of the first round of the Pokal now, and then the second round draw has taken place. Just one Bundesliga side didn't make it through to the second round. Of course, it was Bielefeld who defeated Werder Bremen. Yeah, St. Pauli needed penalties to win their game. Stuttgart were 1-0 and 3-2 down before scoring in the last minute to take it to extra time. Nick Woltemade scored his last goal for the club as well in that game before going to Newcastle. Bayern also didn't have it that easy. They were 2-0 up, brought that back to 2-2, and Kane scored a late penalty. As I said, the draw has been done for the second round. We played on the 28th and 29th of October. Mirko, Dortmund at home.
Easy home game.
At least it's a home game.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want it away.
Definitely. Home game helps in the cup, and I reckon they can get through.
Other all Bundesliga ties are Mainz against Stuttgart, Köln against Bayern. Could be a tasty one, that. And St. Pauli, Hoffenheim, and Heidenheim, Hamburg. So at least 5 Bundesliga sides will also go out in this round.
Nice.
Richard, Union against Bielefeld.
At home, finally. I mean, first of all, yeah, get some revenge for last season. But also, finally a home game in the cup, which does not happen that often.
I might need to see if I can swindle a ticket out of you for that
good luck, mate. Even I mean, because if you have a season ticket, you don't automatically get a game for the cup. So
right.
I'll just have to go in the lottery with everyone. So,
well,
wow.
If there's one going.
Oh, okay. If there's one going, mate. All right, fair enough. I'll let you know.
You know what to call. We usually have a go at Bundesliga clubs for announcing big news after we've recorded. Gladbach were nice enough to announce they were sacking Gerardo Seoane just before we started recording. It does mean that we haven't got too much prepped on this, but we thought we couldn't let it go without commenting on it. It's not a surprise.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, I mean, Gladbach was poor for the last 3, 4, 5 seasons. They finally broke the spell this last season with winning twice in a row, which they haven't done for quite a while.
Yeah.
And they looked fairly good for last season, for the majority
of
last season. They were close to Europe. They were on Europa League spots at times. They played all right. Kleindienst did a good job. But then in the end, the season kind of fell apart.
Well, he got injured, didn't he? I mean, in a way, that's kind of been Gladbach's big problem. They haven't scored a goal this season. He's missed all three games for injury. Be back, I mean, meant to be about Octoberish, Novemberish time, I believe. But I mean, I'm pretty sure. I tipped Seoane to be the first manager sacked, and it wasn't that far out.
Yeah.
It always felt, even when things were starting to go in the right direction, the question was always, if they had a different manager, they probably have a higher ceiling than they do right now. The start of the season's been really poor. I mean, it's one thing not winning, but it's also the least score, and they haven't been able to do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, only in the cup. But even there, they conceded two goals and won only 3-2 against the Oberliga side, which is fifth division. So yeah. You would assume against a fifth division team, you can just win comfortably. Mm. They couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, or I think that was the first hit of, and the officials were like, all right, we need to hit the ground running in the Bundesliga or we might sack him. And then drew at home against Hamburg on the first match day. Didn't score. Yeah. And I mean, in the Tippspiel, I reckon majority probably tipped Gladbach win there.
I would imagine so.
It's not even been a particularly hard start either. I mean, you know, they've played Hamburg and they were away at Stuttgart and lost, but then also Bruggens Bremen 4-0, totally outplayed.
That is pretty horrific. I mean, I don't think they'd won an away game in 10 matches. And then to then start losing your home form, to not score in two games and also have a 4-0 battering in that as well, it's not good. And overall, John, you said you tipped it because it was not really that much of a surprise. He had 1.13 points per game in his time at Gladbach, which is the worst since Franzek was manager between 2009 and 2011.
When Gladbach was poorer,
yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah.
Because then in that time, they were also a bit struggling with relegation and stuff. And then, yeah, they had a pretty good phase in the years between 2010 and 2020 when they regularly qualified for international football, even played Champions League, I think, once.
Yeah.
And yeah, since a couple of years, since they didn't qualify for Europe, they kind of lost it a bit. And it feels like the team's getting weaker every season. They're losing players and they're not really on track to go for Europe again. And yeah, feels like they're getting weaker and weaker. I wouldn't want that job right now. It's like the best is probably you're finishing somewhere in the midfield.
I disagree with you totally. I think it's a great job.
Yeah, you're right. You're probably maybe not going to get the support financially that you would have hoped or that you would have got in previous years, but it's still a great job to have. I mean,
it's a good squad.
It's a good squad. You've got a great stadium that's always packed, decent atmosphere. I think it's a very enticing job for certain people.
Especially for any German as well. Gladbach is still a really big club. I don't think they'll be short of people who are interested.
I mean, I've read Urs Fischer as one of the potential candidates.
That feels like a great fit.
Make sense. Because, he's a good manager.
I don't know if Gladbach would, with all due respect to Urs Fischer, be happy with the kind of football that he would perhaps like to play. If they win enough, then I guess it's...
The football wasn't that bad under him.
The team was bad. They couldn't play better.
Yeah.
Well, okay, maybe.
You know, we did score quite a few. Like I said, I think I said in the preview episode, maybe, there were three seasons in a row where we scored more than 50 goals in the league. It was pragmatic, but it was still offensive. There was still dangerous going forward. And to be honest, the way that Gladbach play at the moment, they need a manager that is going to drill some hard work into them and actually demand some standards. And that's definitely what happened at Union under Fischer. So it wouldn't be a bad idea to appoint him.
Eugen Polanski has taken over on an interim basis for now, the under-23 coach.
Yeah. Maybe also an option for longer. I mean, he played for the club and they haven't really said how long and stuff, but I do feel they want an accomplished manager first. Yeah. But he could be a candidate to be a manager maybe within the next 5 years.
Talking of managers and leaving their jobs, incredibly in the third week of the season, Seoane isn't the first manager sacked. That
has to be a first.
Two within the first 3 weeks or within the first 2 weeks?
There have been managers that have been sacked within the first 2 weeks, but they had been managers in the previous seasons and so on. So
yeah. Listen, after the summer that Bayer Leverkusen have had with the manager leaving, numerous top players leaving, 17 new players coming into the club, the one thing they needed was stability. And That didn't really turn out like that, did it? Ten Hag sacked after two games and just 1 point from those first two games. They were 1-0 up against Hoffenheim and ended up losing 2-1. They were 3-1 up against Werder Bremen, and Bremen were down to 10 men and could only come away with a 3-3 draw. They weren't great in the cup either. They did win 4-0 in the end, but it took them a while to really get going, and a red card for Aschbach, the team they were playing, to really add some extra gloss to that scoreline. I mean, the first question is, what's happened here? Why has Ten Hag gone so early? It seems that there were a lot of problems that had accumulated in only a few weeks of his reign.
I mean, I don't know if it has been speculated widely in the news, but there have to be just more reasons than just sporting-wise, because 100%. You cannot sack a manager after two games and be like, oh, well, he just didn't perform and our goals were higher. We wanted at least 4 points in the first two matches. We sacked him. So there has to be, it has to be more than just the sporting backgrounds.
Yes, it is. I mean, it is more than sporting backgrounds. And from what I've heard and what I've read, it seems that it comes from Ten Hag just not being happy at all with how the transfer business in particular has been conducted. I think the first real sticking point for him was when they sold Granit Xhaka. He said in July, complaining about losing leaders, the club has lost three important players and we won't lose more. Granit is a leader. He signed here for 5 years and still has three to go. He's too important for us to sell him. Then they went and sold him to Sunderland. I think that didn't go down well as a first real sticking point.
With who? With Leverkusen or with Ten Hag?
With Ten Hag.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, at least according to reports, it was all agreed in private that Granit Xhaka was going to be sold. And Ten Hag had agreed that it was going to be sold. And then later, he comes out in a press conference and says that, and that apparently angered the higher-ups in Leverkusen. And he'd also done other stuff publicly in press conferences that just didn't really go down quite well. He complained publicly about the timing of a pre-season game. They lost 5-1 to Flamengo under-20s when they were on their pre-season tour, saying it was too early for the game to be played on the trip. But again, it appears that he was the one who demanded the game to be played at the start of the tour, despite the club giving him the option of having it at the end of it. And so there were a few other things that just his actions and the way that he would speak in public that didn't really seem to go down well. He complained a lot publicly about lack of fitness and injuries and late arrivals, even though I think 9 of the starting 11 against Bremen, for example, completed their preseason camp. And I think as well, with the transfers, it seems like there was a bit of a misunderstanding maybe about his role within the club. It feels like he expected to be a manager in the like that classic English sense of I'm the fucking top dog and I get control everything. He had that at United. Maybe Leverkusen had seen some of the players that he signed and decided that he shouldn't be trusted with that. But I think Leverkusen expected him to be a head coach in the European sense of here are the players that you're going to have. This is what you're working with. You're not the most important person at the club. And you have bosses. You have to respect that hierarchy. And he didn't really seem to be able to handle that very well.
It was very clear that was the case, because when they sacked Ten Hag on deadline day, they then went and signed 3 more players. So obviously the manager has no real say in who comes in or who goes. I mean, who goes, you can't really have a say anyway. A player wants to go, a player wants to go. Sometimes you could block it, but I think generally not so. Maybe all well and good that there was a miscommunication in terms of that, but I don't think it's any secret as to what kind of manager Ten Hag is, whether you like him or not. He has a reputation for being a bit prickly and being a bit stubborn and liking things a certain way. That was the case at Ajax. It was the case at Man United. If that's what you want when you bring him to Leverkusen, it's just
then stick to it.
It's totally wrong appointment. It's just, especially in a summer where you're going through such major transition. If it was another summer where, you know, you're only bringing in like 3 or 4 players, it might not be that big an issue, but if you're still changing the squad on deadline day and you bring in 17 new players for a manager who clearly doesn't operate that way, sorry, but it's not Ten Hag's fault.
Exactly. For me, it's also 95% the fault of the board, because you're not applying for like a manager for third grade school children who's training twice a week in free time. They're having some games. The only goal is they should have fun. This is a multi-million dollar business. Leverkusen's won the league 2 years ago. and you're appointing a new manager, you're probably paying him like around 5 million a year. I'm not quite sure how much the annual salary is. You're signing him for 3, 4, 5 years. Just do your preparation. Ask players from teams where he has been good. Ask players from teams where he has been failing. What kind of manager is he? How good is he when the team is doing great? How is he reacting when the team is losing? Like, that's what you need to do. Do your preparation. You can't do a signing. That's probably, it's a 20, 25 million euro signing in total. And also, yeah, he will influence the team in the future. Just know who you're signing. If you then find out 2 weeks later, we can't really deal with him. His personality is kind of weird. Just find that out beforehand. And then, Richard, you said a lot of stuff that it felt like, yeah, it was kind of Ten Hag's fault and he organized wrong. He didn't do this and that. But still, yeah, you appointed him. The board clearly made a lot of mistakes. And they can't just be like, oh, yeah, we just didn't know that Ten Hag would act like that. I mean, you just have to know that beforehand when you sign a manager. Just do your preparations.
I do agree with you in that sense. One of the complaints that seems to have come out quite a bit, particularly from the players, is the real lack of communication between him and the players. Like, he didn't address the players at all from the time they warmed up to kick off on match day. And Andrich spoke openly about preparation not being good enough. And he was asked if it was the case of the players not implementing what they've been told or simply not knowing what they're meant to do because they've not been told. And he sort of said, it's a mix of both, which is not good. And that seems to be like the kind of thing that you say that Leverkusen could have prepared for that to work out. Okay, what is he like as a man manager? Because one of the things that was, I think, Alonso was praised for is his ability to communicate with players. So you kind of need to check, okay, is the guy that we've got coming in, what is his managerial style? So yeah, I definitely think that they could have prepared for it a lot more. I will say though, I think it was the right decision to get rid of him now. It obviously made headlines, not just in Germany. You know, it was, as we said, no manager has been sacked quicker in the Bundesliga, and it looks pretty brutal. And you think, after two games, fucking hell, like, what are you doing that for? But I think the more you read, the more you look into it, there are a lot of signs to say that I don't think it would have gotten better at all. He'd lost the trust of those above him in the club. It didn't really seem like he had the players on board. It is better to make the decision now, realise the mistake and go, fuck, we've fucked this up, but correct it now rather than let it drag on until October, November, at which point, you know, they could be 12th and struggling even to get into Europe at that point, let alone Champions League. And you've got a manager that then inherits a squad with a really low morale. Making the decision now allows Leverkusen to still get the most out of their season. They can still easily get Champions League. It makes them look very stupid in this moment, but it is that short-term pain for a bit of long-term gain that they
absolutely
can save their season.
Yeah. Somebody mentioned on Twitter as well about him being, you know, we mentioned on the preview that he was a good fit for Leverkusen. I honestly did feel like it was a good fit.
Yeah,
I wouldn't regret saying that so much, but it does seem that the way that Leverkusen then subsequently went around their business for the rest of the summer didn't fit in with the manager that they've brought in. You know, they had Alonso, who was a certain style of manager and different to Ten Hag. It was obvious that Ten Hag wasn't first choice either at Leverkusen. First choice was Cesc Fabregas, who was not allowed to leave by Como and also wanted to stay there. Again, very different from Ten Hag. And it's not the first time that a Bundesliga side does this, where they seem to be picking from all over the all different styles of managers. Like, you pick your style of manager, you stick to that, and you pick out a few candidates based purely around that profile. Not, oh well, Fabregas, we can't get him, he's a big name, or, you know, he's first choice. Ten Hag's available, big name he is, probably one of the biggest name managers available on the market right now. Oh, we can get him, that'd be good, wouldn't it? Get him to come to Leverkusen. That's almost what it feels like a little bit when you see what happens afterwards. To replace Ten Hag, they've gone with Kasper Hjulmand, who was the former Denmark manager, took them to the semi-finals of Euro 2020, lost to England eventually in that, but great performance for Denmark, their best performance since they won it in 92. Got to two other international tournaments as well with Denmark. He won the Danish league title with Nordsjælland, if I'm saying that correctly. That was their first ever league title. Did have a spell already in the Bundesliga with Mainz. Didn't go particularly well. They got knocked out of the cup in the first round and then got knocked out in the Europa League qualification round as well, playoff round, to start the season. So not great. Were unbeaten after 8 games and third in the league. Then only won one of the last 13 and ultimately fell away and he was sacked in February. it seems that a decision's been made to sign somebody who is rather different in terms of their man management style. Kuhlmann, certainly one of his best traits seems to be the way he deals with players. He was the manager when Christian Eriksen had a cardiac arrest on the pitch at Euro 2020, and the way he dealt with that whole situation was impressive. And that seems to be generally what a lot of his former players have said. He's a great man manager. He makes you feel important, involved in how the team is running. And certainly with a young team that Leverkusen have put together, that's really important. New manager bounce is something, isn't it? It always happens, and you can't take too much from one game. But the way they approached the Frankfurt game in comparison to the games they approached before, so much more energy, so much more...
They were the less poor team in a really, really poor game of football. But
that's more ability and tactics. The energy that they showed and...
You mean the energy of Andrich, who got sent off with the second yellow, or the energy of the other player who got sent off with a straight red, or was it also second yellow?
Also second yellow.
Now, they overstepped the mark on a couple of occasions, but certain endeavour there, maybe...
I think Frankfurt was just horrible.
It wasn't a great performance.
If any team that doesn't win that home game shouldn't play in the Bundesliga, so I can't say anything about Jürgen. I did like him at Mainz. He seems like a relaxed person, clear person, a strategic person who's clear in the interviews. He's not too emotional. And I feel like managers like that can sometimes make teams or individual players better when you just explain calmly the way you want to play and don't let others stress you, don't let the media stress you. I like those style of managers. Maybe it will work out at Leverkusen, maybe not. But I also can't say anything after the first match. Yeah, they just won a home game. But
I mean, that's fair enough.
Usually also players are all super motivated in the first game, because if they perform well, they're probably going to play in the next games as well. So it's kind of you're shuffling the cards new. They were all right in phases of the game, but it was in general just a really horrible game. So, I mean, I can't say much.
Yeah, Mirko, they beat Frankfurt on match day 3 for their first win of the season. It was also Frankfurt's first loss of the season. Take away... Let's look at the positives first. No, that's sometimes difficult for you, but it was a good first 3 weeks of the season, the first 3 games of the season. 3 wins, 3 comfortable wins, lots of goals.
Beautiful goals as well.
Very much so. Ritso Doan in particular, mm-hmm, looking very, very good since his arrival from Freiburg. What did you make of it? You've been happy with what you've seen? Certainly in the first three games?
No, definitely not. I did not like all performances. I didn't like the cup performance. Against Bremen, it was all right, but Bremen is really poor. That's why also Gladbach sacked the manager. If you lose against Bremen 4-0, Bremen's poor. They're going to struggle all season. Maybe not after I'm saying this, but I think they're really poor. And the Hoffenheim game was a decent away performance, scored some decent goals. I think that was probably the best game. But then the Leverkusen game is, I mean, I think I tuned in after 10-15 minutes. And I thought, Frankfurt now kind of losing it after a good start of the game, which I haven't seen. Hmm. But after that, it was just nothing.
I think you jinxed it, mate, if you started watching then.
I shouldn't have watched it, yeah. But like, there was nothing. And they were against 10 men for 30 minutes plus, something like that. When did Andrich get sacked off? 25 minutes
early
at least.
Early enough.
They had one shot on goal from 25 meters.
Yeah, it wasn't impressive. I mean,
what are you doing? And it's this Leverkusen side. It's like, if you score the first goal, they're getting nervous. Mm. This is a game where, like, put pressure on them, they're going to get nervous. They didn't do that. And then to concede a third goal from 9 men is kind of comical. But, I mean, it was a fully deserved win for Leverkusen in a fairly poor game of football. Lots of balls lost. Yeah. No stability, no passing sequences. And it's also clear the game was decided by free kicks and standard set pieces. And so not a really good game of football.
No, it wasn't.
And by far the worst performance from Frankfurt. And at so many question marks, like, why aren't you going more aggressively into this game? Why don't you go more offensive when you're against 10 men? I did like Cetera in that game, the goalkeeper. Cetera maybe was the best player, and we conceded 3 goals. And it's like, everyone else was just really, really poor. Maybe it didn't help that we lost Christensen after 10, 12, 15 minutes, muscle injury. But like, that can't be an excuse. You're professional football players. They brought in quality, and the squad has quality, and they offered nothing.
I actually predicted a draw in this game, and I should have really gone with the win for Leverkusen because, of course, the new manager coming in after a horror start, you'd expect a reaction. But is it worth paying that much attention to the loss? Anyway, you've now lost the last 12 games at Leverkusen competitions.
That's why I bet on Frankfurt, or I tipped Frankfurt would win. I was like, if they're ever going to win away at Leverkusen, it's going to be this year.
You've only ever won 6 out of 42 games there in all competitions, losing 65%.
Yeah, and we got battered really hard, like 6-0 within the last 5 years. So we got battered a lot there.
It's crazy that you got such a poor record.
Yeah, Dortmund away, Leverkusen away are really horrible. Munich away is also not much better. But yeah, I mean, there was a chance. But again, yeah, you should at least not look completely poor against a nervous Leverkusen side with a new manager. If they have a good day, you can lose at Leverkusen. And that's fair, but they didn't look like getting anything for any minute of the game.
Is losing 2-2 a bit of a blow so far? Against Bremen, you won 4-1 and you scored some nice goals, but there are also times when like Bremen had a lot of 3v3 opportunities running into space. You saw that as well in the Leverkusen game at times. It seems like the defensive element
and
has lost a bit of stability.
Especially now that, I mean, we have some other injuries and stuff, and it feels like, yeah, maybe Theat has to play centre-back.
Yeah,
and
he looks a little...
He can play on the sides, but he can't play in the centre. I always liked Tuta. He wasn't really liked that much in the fan base, too slow or too many mistakes, whatever. Mm. I liked him. He was a decent player, and I always liked it when he was in the squad. It shouldn't decide the season. He wasn't that important. But yeah, in situations where you have injured players and stuff, he's a good squad player, but he probably liked the money more in Saudi Arabia, so you can't really blame him. It wasn't really like the club was like, oh, we need you, we're gonna play so many games, you're gonna play at least 20 games, you're so important, you won the Europa League with us, please stay. It probably wasn't that, so can't blame the player for leaving.
Yeah, I just feel like that is Frankfurt's weak point anyway, is that centre back pairing. Going Koch is obviously a good player, but whoever plays alongside him, it feels like it's hard to pinpoint exactly. You know, Collins started there against Leverkusen and then went to right back, obviously, with Chris going off. Collins made his debut for Germany during the international break and was absolutely tore apart by Slovakia's left winger in that game and got hauled off after 45 minutes. Didn't play in the second game. So that certainly hasn't done his confidence any good. It felt like Frankfurt were really struggling to deal with Leverkusen's intensity, closing down, high press, quick press. And it looked like they were really flustered when in possession pretty much for the majority of the game, and certainly in the first half. As you said, it wasn't a pretty game that was decided by... I mean, Ronaldo is a brilliant free kick taker, and ultimately two of his free kicks decided...
First one was an own goal, Jonathan.
It's an own goal, but I mean, it's a great free kick off of the post, and then, you know... Frankfurt have scored 8 goals from 13 shots on target.
That's not good.
That's efficient. Not good.
Nope.
It's efficient on the one side, but it does suggest
you need to create more chances.
You probably aren't going to end up being that efficient in the long run.
At the same
shots
time,
on target, 14th in the league, Frankfurt.
That's poor. That's definitely poor. But being efficient in general is not a bad thing. You know, we complain about teams that waste a load of chances. So when you're efficient, that shouldn't be a bad thing either. But you should be creating a lot
more
than 14.
More.
Yeah,
you should create more.
On a game-by-game basis, it's impressive. But let's look at the top strikers in the world. None of them score 60, 70% of their shots on target.
Speaking of scoring goals, Ritsu Doan, when he scored... that wonderful goal against Hoffenheim, became the 294th different player to score a Bundesliga goal for Frankfurt. No other team has had more different players score in Bundesliga history.
Interesting. Yeah.
Quite an impressive stat that is, isn't it? It's also that game was the first time in 13 years that Frankfurt has started the season with back-to-back wins.
Whew. Yeah, nice. The first time in 13 years.
First time in 13
years. So I was alive at that time.
Yeah, I've seen him before.
What did we finish? Which season was it then? The
12-13.
Oh, yeah, we just got promoted. We just got promoted. And then we also won at Hoffenheim on the first or second match day in that season. And we won 4-0 and I was at the game.
It's funny how it works out, isn't it? In terms of goals, now you haven't really had that issue so far. Uzun, Doan and Bahoya have been particularly impressive. Jonathan Burkhart hasn't had the best start to life at Frankfurt yet. He's still waiting for his first goal. He did miss the
second
game.
So is Florian Wirtz.
Very true.
It's only three games. He's going to score.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, it wasn't the best games, but he also had some injury problems. He didn't even play one game.
Yeah.
Back problems. So I wouldn't interpret too much into it, but yeah, for a striker in three games, also in the cup, didn't score in the cup and against fifth division side, so you could expect a bit more, but I'll just hope the goals will be coming.
Let's talk about Köln, who certainly by two of us at least were predicted to go down. Don't think it was all three of us.
No, I didn't even have them in the bottom three.
I think me and you, Mirka, had them both to go down, and do have to hold our hands up at the moment and say that that's looking unlikely with the way they are playing.
Not, I wouldn't say it's out.
I know you might say, oh, the results give a certain thing, but the way they're playing suggests that they have a lot more than perhaps we gave them credit for. 7 points after three games. 1-0 away at Mainz in the first game. Took advantage of Mainz being European competition, perhaps on a slow start. Against Freiburg, they totally outplayed Freiburg off the park from start to finish. It was 4-1 in the end. It could have been more. And, I mean, some beautiful goals in that game as well. But, yeah, it could have been more than the 4-1 that it ultimately was. And then 3-3 at the weekend against Wolfsburg. The latest goal in Bundesliga history scored by Jakub Kaminski in the 104th minute of the game. 14-minute of injury time.
On loan from Wolfsburg. Brilliant. As well. Love that. Yeah. And he celebrated even better.
What a story. Köln seemed to be adventurous going forwards. Certainly very good on the counter-attack and are looking to play to that as much as possible. But finding the situation so far in their opening three games. They have the fifth most shots in the Bundesliga this term already. 8 goals scored, only Bayern have more. I wanted to ask you about Kvasniak and his attire on the sideline. What do we make of this? Wearing the club shirt for the game. Where do we stand on that?
I've got to say, I don't actually mind it that much. I'm somewhat surprised that he's allowed to, but I guess because he always wears the opposite shirt. Yeah. He will the home shirt away at Mainz and the away shirt at home to Freiburg. But it's like most managers always wear some kind of club merch anyway, so I don't really see what the big deal is. Plus, I've got to say, it kind of suits him. Like with the jeans, certain managers, it wouldn't. Like, you know, you could just can't really imagine them wearing a kit. You'd look like a bit of a dickhead.
Louis van Gaal with
the kit. But he just looks like a random bloke from the stadium anyway. Like, if the camera cut to him and he was in the crowd, you wouldn't think, what the fuck's he doing there? He just like look like a normal bloke.
That's why he should just hold a bratwurst and a beer. Make it look even better. Yeah, I mean, style-wise, I think it's pretty horrible. I don't like it at all.
It's a bit gimmicky, isn't it?
I mean, I
can kind of get away with it for the first game. I can kind of get it for the first game. But like every game, and then wearing the opposite shirt.
He got so much criticism after the first game, so it feels like he just stick to it and be like, all right, I'm doing it all season. Feels like that.
Now he has to, right?
Yeah. Now also, since they're doing good, I think he has to. I mean, when they lose the first game, he's probably switching.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're wearing club merch, fair enough. And I do like club merch or like sporting apparel, gear, whatever. I prefer that over a normal suit because like a normal suit is too much. I mean, they do have the rule in the Champions League, which I mean, I think they softened it a bit, but they did have the rule. In Champions League matches, managers have to wear the suit. I think you can get away with it if you wear like a nice pullover or whatever, but you can't wear the shirt.
Who wears suits nowadays anyway? The suit has gone out of football management. I can't think of many
managers.
Yeah,
but like in Champions League, they definitely used to have that rule. And I don't like that in Bundesliga games. Why would you wear a suit? You're running around on the sidelines, just wear like the training apparel, whatever.
Okay, slight tangent here, but then what is your style of sideline attire then?
Tracksuit.
It depends on how much the manager is involved with the coaching and stuff. Like, why are you wearing a tracksuit and that if you're not involved maybe in the training and the coaching that you're getting? It like, if you're just a guy that stands on the sideline and observes and lets all your coaches do the job, at that point I'm like, what are you wearing a tracksuit for? Then you stick to the suit.
I'm not sure I'm a suit man, but I think I like smart casual. at least. I love Thomas Tuchel, but Tuchel's the kind of manager who just goes into the club shop and buys every bit of gear that he can get his hands on and puts it all on. Did it quite a lot at Chelsea. And it does look a bit jarring. It's interesting that international managers, and they actually almost always wear suits of some kind, at least shirt and jacket, maybe not the tie.
So Schuster is probably what you would like. He's wearing some casual stuff.
Listen, I'm not a massive fan of him, but I quite like Pep Guardiola's style. I think that's the kind of style of manager that I like in terms of their attire. You know what I mean? Maybe a Kovac.
So you're saying turtleneck, sweatshirt. Is he wearing jeans?
No, not,
he, what kind of...
Not a turtleneck. Kind of, we're getting very specific now. Yeah. not a turtleneck. But jacket, jeans fine, trainers are fine.
Now that you're talking, I think Dino Topmüller is always wearing like some turtlenecks.
Dino Topmüller's a good shout.
I do like how he dresses. Fair enough. But I mean, especially younger managers who are running around on the sidelines, I do like the training jacket or whatever.
If you like this content, maybe we'll do an episode on 1 to 18, but managers, how they're dressed. Let's get back to Köln, because obviously they have been really good in going forward. Kaminski has been a really good signing. Marius Bülter, we did mention him in the preview, and he's been a real revelation for them so far.
We thought he could be more of a squad player. Did we expect him to start
regularly? I don't think we expected him not to start. I mean, we probably not expect him the impact that he's had, but we said he's got experience, yeah, and, you know, has performed at this level, and he's doing that again for Köln. They're good going forward. At the back, probably a couple of question marks so far. They have conceded 4. They have faced the 5th most shots in the league with 15 so far. They only conceded 38 last term. And of course, I understand that the quality and the rising quality in the Bundesliga is significant. Just interesting that, I mean, they're scoring more goals than they perhaps were at the rate of last season. Therefore, are conceding more. It's a bit more adventurous. And that's probably not what we usually see from a promoted side.
Yeah, and certainly as well, just in terms of scoring goals, I think the fact that they've got 4 points now from late goals. Bülter scored the winner in Mainz really late on, and obviously the late equaliser against Wolfsburg. You talk about whether or not they're going to be in the relegation towards the end of the season. I made this point before. So many times we forget how important goals or points are at the beginning of the season, just because at the end of it, you know, it feels like they're worth more, but ultimately they're not. 4 points is 4 points. Those 4 points could easily keep them up at the end of the season. And the fact that they kept on going and kept on going and managed to get results from tight games, it definitely bodes well for the rest of the season, because that's a good trait to have. Regardless, it might not work every time, it might lose and you might concede, but if you've got that ability to just keep going until the end, you're going to get enough points that should hopefully keep you up.
It also tells the fitness at least is all right.
Yeah.
And they can go forward and they will go forward. Normally, it's the other way around. You're just promoted, you're scared at the end of the... And you're just passing it around and being like, let's not concede.
Yeah, it's important to build momentum early on. Results matter. Results are what people look at in the bottom line. And to have that momentum early on is far easier to build than it is later in the season when things are a bit more set. Freiburg, very difficult start to the season for them in the opening 2 games. You mentioned the Köln game there, lost 4-1. And they were also beaten 3-1 at home against Augsburg. They then followed up with a 3-1 win over Stuttgart. And perhaps it's kind of what Freiburg were last season, really. Not that much different. They had plenty of games last year where they were significantly beaten. They lost 8 games by at least 2 goals last year.
Wow.
And still managed to finish 5th.
with a negative goal difference.
What it does show that, again, Freiburg are a team that are able to bounce back from disappointments and poor performances a lot better than other teams are. The performances in the first 2 games were interesting. They had over 60% possession on both occasions. Just 6 shots on target across the 2 games and 2 goals. Then changed in the 3rd game.
I think there you're seeing the loss of Doan there, because he is a player who is capable of unlocking defences, and it's noticeable that they would have a lot of possession but then did nothing, because they have lost a big factor for playing key passes to create chances. He obviously scored quite a few himself for Freiburg, and they don't really have a direct replacement or even someone as good as him in the squad. You know, I don't want to say he was too good for Freiburg, because they're a team that have played in Europe recently and have finished well in the league, but it's pretty clear that Doan has the talent to play at a much higher level, and Freiburg, or teams like Freiburg, they don't have a long list of players like that for obvious reasons, because they don't stick around that long. And so it kind of makes a bit of sense that, yeah, they haven't lost the ability to play football and keep the ball, but just those key moments to be able to then turn that into creating opportunities is obviously something that he still needs to try and work out.
Yeah, it seems like he's struggling to kind of know how to use the new players that have come in as well. Doan was, you know, we'll see it at Frankfurt, I'm sure, more often. We already have seen it a bit at Frankfurt, but he shoots from distance quite a lot. And Freiburg are a team that use set pieces really well. Grifo is a great set piece taker. We know that. Great from free kicks, great from corners. Doan's the kind of player who'll cut inside and shoot regularly. If he doesn't score, keeper has a save to make, or it's effective plan for the corner, and they score goals from those situations. Jan-Niklas Bester was the player who played on the right wing in that position in the last game against Stuttgart. And I know they won the game, but he was taken off, had next to no impact on the game, and he's a very different kind of player at Doan. He's more cross the ball. I mean, he's also a good set-piece taker, you know, but Grifo has already got that spot filled in. Freiburg did win the game against Stuttgart, but you talk about poor games of football. That was a poor game of football, and for 75 minutes they effectively not in it at all. Then they took off Hurler, who is limited, got to be honest. He's a player who is a good squad player, works hard, and will pop up with a few goals, but he's not a striker that you can rely on to really lead the line. They brought on a striker who has the potential to be that player in Matanovic, and he goes and scores too. One's a penalty, but his finish for the first goal was great. He gave them so much more of a focal point up front. He's taller, bigger, stronger than Hurler is, and it really worked for them. So I expect to see him played a lot more moving forward.
Well, he originally wasn't, Schuster said that he originally wasn't going to put him in the squad for the game, but in the last training session before the match, he said he basically put every single chance in the net. He was like, right, fuck, I've got to play this lad.
No, he was impressive, and that was his debut as well since arriving from Frankfurt in the summer, so a great way to introduce yourself. That right wing position replacing Doan does seem to be a problem. He played Dinkshi there in the first two games. Dinkshi then didn't start the third game at all, and Bester was there. Suzuki as well played an attacking midfield, and he was taken out after the first two games. It feels like, yeah, as I said, he's still getting used to the new players that he has and how they're actually going to fit into his team, especially when you lose such a big player like Doan.
Yeah, true. Although, having said that, the problems in the Köln match, for example, were all defensively. They were horrendous at the back. The amount of space they left at the back was just not Bundesliga level. They were leaving men completely alone, unmarked in the penalty area. I reckon I'd say at least three of the four goals could have been avoided if they'd have defended properly. Augsburg's third goal, for example, I think Dinkshi lost the ball probably about 25, 30 yards away from the Augsburg goal. Marius Wolf won the ball off him, and there was no other outfield Freiburg player. All he had to do was just dribble two-thirds of the length of the pitch to score. There was no one challenging him. That's basic defending.
But, I mean, they were trailing. They were 2-0 down, so...
It's the first half, though.
Yeah.
It's a bit desperate in the first game of the season, 2-0 down, to already be going gung-ho to try and find a recovery there.
Yeah, the thing is, the defense, five of the first six goals, you said the Marius Wolf goal, who just ran through, should have at least one to be there in your own half and supporting the goalkeeper. But the other five goals were all crossings. And crossings can be hard to defend.
Not when you're leaving men alone on the back post. So, like, that's just...
I mean, especially in the Köln game, the crossings and the goals were fairly nice. In crossings, it's always like... the striker has the first mover advantage. Whereas, like, if there's passings and dribblings through the center, you should be more compact. Mm. But, like, one cross ball, you only have one-on-one defending, you don't have more than one man defending. It can happen. It can happen easily, more easily than someone, dribbling through your lines, or if them having so many passes that your defenders go out. So with crosses, I'm always a little bit more defensive in criticizing. But, yeah, I mean... defense isn't their strength number one. Let's put it that way.
Very, very true indeed. I also wanted to discuss the Hamburg derby, which was on match day two of the season at Hamburg. Pauli won that 2-0, rather surprisingly, and it kind of sums up the team's two seasons so far. While Hamburg have struggled. 1 point from their opening three games, 0 goals scored as well. Pauli, 7 points from their three games. Again, another team who we, I think all three of us might have tipped Pauli, you know, Dan.
I think I did. Yeah, well, I said both the Hamburg teams would get relegated directly, I think. So.
Not looking good, is it, already, eh?
Well, 50% there. I'll take those odds.
I meant more for me. Köln and Pauli are both unbeaten so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I've been very surprised by Pauli. They were good in that in Derby. And, you know, we spoke during the summer in the preview about where are these goals going to come from? They've already scored 7, 3 from Hutonji, the striker they signed to come in.
He looks good, I've got to say. I mean, I didn't really know that much about him beforehand, I must be honest, but certainly he was such a nuisance in the Derby. And it makes such a difference having a player that plays facing the goal and, you know, constantly playing off the shoulder, constantly running in behind. It offers such a good outlet. And then as well, to put on top of that, that he clearly knows where the goal is and can then convert the chances. He looks like a very good signing so far for Pauli.
I wasn't expecting Hamburg to struggle that much scoring goals, but then also it's only 3 games and they're a newly promoted team and at least they got a point. So, I mean, there have been 17 teams in the Bundesliga that haven't scored within the first 3 match days. Can you guess how many got relegated at the end of the season?
I think I know this because I was looking at this earlier, but it wasn't as many as I expected.
One even finished in Europe or something.
I think like seventh or eighth.
So, John, how many would you expect from 17?
I mean, you would expect quite a few, wouldn't you? But then I guess not as many as you expect. Maybe 7?
Only 4. One team played playoffs. And, of course, saved themselves. It was Hamburg. but, yeah, I mean, not scoring doesn't mean you don't get any points. You could have also had 2 points after 3 games not scoring. So it's not that bad. And Hamburg did get a point away at Gladbach. So the start isn't that bad. I just don't understand how, A, you can be so poor in the Derby. Like, it was a confident win. I mean, Pauli just came from a last-minute point against Dortmund, so obviously they were motivated, and then they were in the Bundesliga last year already, so maybe slight favorite role, but it's not like St. Pauli is having a squad 10 times better than Hamburg. So it was kind of similar level, and they were pretty poor overall game. Königsdörfer scored, but it got taken off for offside, which it would have been the 1-1 shortly after halftime. I mean, it's kind of this classic situation where like one piece of his toe is offside or whatever. It's kind of ridiculous that they take it back, but it was kind of deserved because Pauli should have scored the 2-0, which was taken back because of a foul that wasn't a foul.
So
Hamburg was really poor. Pauli was by far the better team, should have won it. And then you're going away to Munich and everyone is making jokes like how you're getting better at every time and you're 4-0 down after 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Something like that.
29 minutes.
What are they doing?
I mean,
so those two things are really big questions. Not scoring, fair enough. I mean, also playing a derby, playing away at Munich, playing away at Gladbach, not scoring is not a big problem, really. But losing a derby by being by far the worst team and getting bettered in Munich when everyone expects you to get bettered, then you have one job of not getting bettered.
Yeah.
It puts a lot of pressure on to lose a derby at home so early on in the season. And again, speaking about momentum, you know, that can really start to stick and, you know, can't really afford to let this carry on much longer. Pauli, been so impressed by Pauli. Spoke about the goals, and they seem to have addressed that so far. You fear that could imbalance them defensively. And they have conceded 4, but the 7.7 shots per game they've conceded so far in the Bundesliga this season is the lowest in the division by at least 2. 3 fewer per game than Bayern, for a little bit of context. So, you know, feels like Pauli might, I don't want to build them up too much, but it suggests that there's quite a bit of potential in this Pauli team that perhaps we all, or at least, no, we all overlooked, didn't we? As we said, we all got them to relegate. So,
Just to very quickly come back to about Hamburg, Mirko, you said the one thing that Hayes Fowler needed to do was just not get battered by Bayern. They last beat Bayern in 2009. They won 1-0.
At home or away?
They
What are we talking?
I think it was at home they won. Obviously, there's been a few seasons in which they haven't played each other, but in the 19 following games, they only had one draw, having scored 7 and conceded 71.
Yeah, so they do get better every year. But like at some point, a manager might have the idea of, yeah, our match plan today is maybe nick a draw, maybe lose 1 or 2 nil, but don't open. When did they concede the first goal? 2 minutes? 3 minutes?
Yeah.
How long did the match plan actually work? For 2 minutes? It's kind of ridiculous.
I'd like to see how Hamburg compare to Schalke at Bayern. I feel like certainly in recent years it'd be pretty close.
I think Schalke didn't get hammered that much. I mean, especially Hamburg got better at 8-0.
In recent seasons they have been.
Yeah, but Hamburg got better at 8-0. Then there was a season where they lost 5-0, then 8-0 again. Within 3 games you're getting better at 8-0 twice. How does that work?
And a 6-0 and a 9-2 as well.
It's insane.
Yeah, I mean, you say that Schalke haven't done that badly, but the last 3 games, they've lost 6-0, 8-0 and 5-0 at the Allianz Arena.
Also pretty poor. But 8-0 twice.
Yeah, seems to would suggest that Bayern like playing teams in blue at least. Let's take a look at some things that have been happening off the pitch in the Bundesliga. And certainly from a UK perspective, the big news is the Bundesliga TV deal in the UK. Can you call it a TV deal? A deal would suggest money change hands. And that doesn't seem to be the case on a lot of it.
And some of it's not even on TV. So.
Yeah. Well, let's at least give you the facts. Sky still have the 6:30 game, the top spiel, every week. Around that, it's all changed. All Sunday games are now on Amazon Prime. Pay-per-view per game at $2.49, which is
a bit of a piss take.
Yeah, I would say quite as much. Friday games are on the BBC iPlayer, or BBC. I would assume the iPlayer is not going to be on BBC every night. BBC One, is it? I wouldn't have thought. But it's available on BBC.
BBC Sport website, yeah. And the iPlayer, yeah.
Okay, so far. I guess the big news is that 20 games will be shown apiece on The Overlap, which is a podcast hosted by Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, Roy Keane and Ian Wright. I mean, that's a stick to football, isn't it? So I think it's mainly Neville and Carragher.
Well, they've got loads of other people because they have quite a few other shows now on YouTube. So I think they've got a stable of people.
It's involved. Hard to know who will be involved in actually hosting that. And the other 20 games will be on Mark Goldbridge's channel. That's football. That's the most controversial part of it. Depends what you think of the guy. But from our point of view, not only is he questionable in terms of the views he has and the way he consumes football, but he also doesn't have any seemingly Bundesliga affiliation either.
He called the Bundesliga shit.
I'm sure he has done.
2021.
That wouldn't surprise me.
We've done that as well. So, I mean, I wouldn't be too critical with him for that. But yeah, I mean, he started, as I mentioned, as a United broadcaster.
But we know he's a turncoat anyway, because he's made a career out of being a Man United fan. He supports Nottingham Forest. So, you know, his decisions and opinions clearly don't last very long. From a positive point of view, and let's try and look at it, the Bundesliga have had issues in selling their international rights in recent years. That's undoubted. Of the top 5 leagues in Europe, it's the 4th in terms of revenue per season from international rights. So that's outside the country where it is. €263 million per season, which, I mean, you can't compare to the Premier League, but Serie A and La Liga are significantly more than that. We know they've already explored other avenues in trying to find a way to make more money from marketing and TV rights and that kind of thing. And that was pushed back by Bundesliga clubs and Bundesliga 2 clubs last year, of course, the investor deal. So this is a way of, I guess, attracting a new audience. Whatever you think of Goldbridge, he is a popular streamer. A lot of people watch his live streams. If you're just tapping into that audience, you probably get an uprising following.
The thing is, the UK market is kind of irrelevant anyway, because like everyone watches the Premier League, no one watches the Bundesliga. So if you want to make money, you need Asia, you need the US. The UK market, you're not going to make a lot of money. So this is kind of a test balloon. We just test the UK. If anything does good, we can do it in other countries as well. But, I mean, the UK market is so irrelevant because no one watches the Bundesliga in the UK. Why would they? They have five leagues that are competitive, interesting.
I don't necessarily agree. First of all, you only have to look at the way the Bundesliga has developed in the last 15, 20 years and how popular the Bundesliga has become in the UK over the last 15, 20 years to see that.
To go into the stadiums, drink beer and watch football.
But that's something.
But that is great.
Yeah, but as a result, people still watch it. People comment on our Twitter page complaining how difficult it is to watch some of the games. And on the one hand, I can understand the YouTube deal and whatnot. I mean, admittedly, I'm from a bit of a different generation. But if I don't want to watch it, I don't have to. You can also watch it on the BBC. You know, the Bundesliga own YouTube channel is also showing the Friday night games and all of the Zweite Bundesliga games on a Friday. And just because Goldbridge is a twat doesn't mean that he shouldn't be involved. I think a load of pundits are twats, and it doesn't mean that the TV channel shouldn't have any rights either. And I do think it does make sense to try and engage with younger fans whose consumption of sport and media is different from what I knew as a kid. Nowadays, most TVs are smart TVs that you can watch YouTube on it like you watch Netflix or any other normal TV. It's not just something now, you know, you have to watch on your phone.
How often does the Premier League have Friday games?
They don't.
Intermittently.
So then it makes sense to sell the Friday game to the UK market because that's the most valuable kickoff time, probably.
I would say I agree with that.
This is one thing, actually, that I sort of wanted to come to. They haven't sold any of the 3:30 games in the UK.
They're not allowed. Blackout.
That's UK games.
It's every single game. No live football is allowed to be shown on TV between 3 and 5 o'clock in the UK.
Wow. Not even foreign games?
Not even foreign games. Wow. I remember once the Clásico even, the first
Oh, shit, yeah, of course.
Weren't allowed to be shown. No football is allowed between 3 and 5 o'clock in the UK.
Well, that kind of defeats my point. Fair enough. Okay, well then on another example, the other thing that I didn't really understand was the decision to sell games to Amazon, who are then going to put all their games under pay-per-view, because I dread to think of what the viewing figures would be for that. We've said for so long, the one thing the Bundesliga needs, you know, you're not going to get more money if you're not growing your fan base. End of story. And there is absolutely no way that this will bring in any new fans. I'm a Bundesliga fan, and even I wouldn't pay £2.49 to watch a game unless it was Union. Like, how are you meant to compete for new viewers when you put games on pay-per-view? It's a ridiculous decision.
It's probably Amazon's decision.
I disagree. I think the Bundesliga would be aware of what they were going to do when they did it. I'd be surprised if not.
That's my point that I'm trying to make, is that surely they should be asking the people that they're considering selling rights to, what the fuck are you going to do with our games? How are you going to market them? What are you going to do? Like, it's not going to get casual fans in. It's not going to get them involved. Even the BBC, who have the games on free to air, I was texting my mates before the Hamburg Derby to say, hey, you know, you should watch it. And my mate responded, it said that he initially couldn't find it because it was buried on the iPlayer and BBC website. You're not going to get new fans in if they're not even aware of it being there. You know, these are similar things that, like I say, I don't know if they can stipulate it contractually to say, like, when our game's on, can you please put it on the homepage that it's like right there so that people can watch it or something. I don't know, but it's pretty useless selling rights to a holder that isn't going to actually do anything to promote it. That's exactly what happened to Sky, where they gave them the rights and Sky ended up burying it, the games being very, very hard to find. And so on the one hand, I feel like it's a good thing that they've tried to explore other avenues, but then it's always that thing of one step forward, two steps back with the Bundesliga.
It really does feel like you're saying, Mirka, that it is just a bit of a test. Bit of like, let's try out a few things here and let's see what works. The Bundesliga's selling points are the fans. And also, if you look at this transfer window, the number of young talents who are going to the Premier League. If you look at Voltemade or Wirtz or Frimpong or Merlin Rohr, there are a lot of young Bundesliga players who are going. So if you're a Premier League fan, you'll be going, oh, I could be watching my team's next signing, kind of thing, realistically, right? Those are the things. And £2.49 for a game. You do have to question who is making these decisions and who it would honestly be better off, the Bundesliga in the long run would be better off just saying, right, we'll give all the games to free to YouTube.
Yes.
Or a YouTube channel, YouTube streamer, another one. So I don't know. But they'd be far better off doing that than doing this. In the long run, the next TV deal, when, let's say, Mark Goldbridge's fans say, oh, Bundesliga's not that bad, you know, and a few, then you might turn around and say, well, okay, now we can sell a package to somebody, and then more people are going to watch it because it's on what they've got. But who, seriously, look at the games that were this weekend. Augsburg, St. Pauli, and Borussia Mönchengladbach against Werder Bremen. I'm sorry, but who in the UK is going to go and pay $2.49 to watch those games? St. Pauli, maybe, because they're a bit of a cult club. But honestly, that is not a way to make money or even garner interest because no one's watching it.
Exactly. I think you make a great point about trying to just say, hey, do you know what? We'll put it all up on YouTube or whatever. Because I guarantee, like, every person my age who likes football watched Italian football in the 90s because in the UK it was on free to air. You've seen it in other sports when cricket was on free to air, when Formula One was on free to air. The public interest is bigger than when it's behind a paywall. And right now they need to generate interest. Give it away for 2 or 3 years. And then, yeah, maybe you can be a bit cunty then and start trying to sell it to subscription packets or whatever. But you need to generate interest. And I don't see how giving it away could be any worse than putting games on pay-per-view.
Yeah,
doesn't make any sense. Football fans will generally watch football if given the opportunity. Do you know what I mean? And particularly as well, with more people coming over to Germany, wanting to go to the games, that does also get them interested in the league, that then when maybe they're back in England, it's like, yeah, well, I will watch some more games, but they don't want to have to spend more money on what is already quite a lot of money to have to spend to watch games.
Even doing a highlight show on Channel 4 or Channel 5 or ITV or whatever, a 1.5 hour, 2 hour Bundesliga show would be so much better, because what you can do in that situation is you can show what the Bundesliga is great. You can show stories about the fans. You can show stories about behind the scenes. You can share that with people rather than maybe just showing a game and people don't have the context if you're not a major follower. So, yeah, a good effort in some areas, but tone deaf in others as well, I would say. Moving on, the transfer window has drawn to a close, and it was a busy one. Certainly towards the end, it felt like a lot was happening. Let's go through a few of them and have a little chat about them. Nicholas Jackson to Bayern Munich would be the main one. Bayern were desperate, weren't they, for a backup striker to Harry Kane. Eventually got one. The first issue was it seemed like it wasn't going to happen because Chelsea wanted to sell him permanently. Then there was an agreement on a loan deal because he needed to go. Then Liam Delap got injured for Chelsea, which meant that it looked like Nicholas Jackson had to go back to Chelsea. He was called back to Chelsea, refused to go back to Chelsea.
Nice.
Stayed in Munich the whole time. At which point, Chelsea obviously turned around and gone, right, we need to find a contingency plan. Ended up bringing back a striker who was out on loan at Sunderland, which meant that Jackson could go to Bayern. Chelsea managed to then get them to agree to an obligation to buy, which wasn't in the original deal. On paper, looked like a good deal. Until Uli Hoeneß goes on to German TV on Sunday morning and proceeds to tell everybody there's absolutely no chance that Nicholas Jackson will sign permanently for Bayern Munich because he has to start 40 games. Then saying specifically, that will not happen. How anybody allows him to go out and talk is absolutely beyond me. Got to put a muzzle on him.
But it's always on Doppelpass, isn't
it?
And isn't he just like mates with everyone there that runs it?
But he's got such a big gob. We're talking about transfer and transfer business and the players that they've missed out on this summer in terms of Florian Wirtz and in terms of Nick Voltermada, and his chat in the background all the time about these players. There used to be a time where Bayern hoovered up all of the up-and-coming German talent. And this summer, in particular, the two most in-demand German players have left the league totally and gone to the UK and haven't gone to Bayern. Now, I'm not saying it's only Uli Hoeneß, let me take that right, but his constant chat about players in the background, when Voltermada and Wirtz were still undecided where they were going to go, Uli Hoeneß was still commenting on it every 3 days.
Yeah, fair enough, that might not help. But in the end, it's wages and it's sporting perspective. And I wouldn't speculate too much about what Hoeneß does and what he doesn't do. For Voltermada and Wirtz, it was clearly Bayern didn't want to pay what others were able to pay. I mean,
Voltimada, yes. Florian Wirtz, by the sounds of it, made a decision to go to Liverpool over Bayern. I don't think it was about the money. I think Bayern Munich at the end of the day would have paid
the 150
whatever they wanted.
Yeah,
because
fair enough.
It's Wirtz. He is the absolute golden boy alongside Musiala, who they have already. He is the golden boy of German football, and Bayern have been after Wirtz for 2 or 3 years, really. I don't think it's about the money. I think they'd have paid it. They'd have paid what they wanted.
He said he doesn't want to take the easy route. He wants to kind of play against the best of the world and become a better player, and he thought he has better chances at Liverpool because, like, he knows the Bundesliga and he knows effectively against 2 or 3 opponents it's going to be hard, the rest they're going to win.
I
can understand.
But anyway, back to Jackson, the message that sends to a player who has made it so very clear that he's desperate to play for Bayern Munich, he won't go back to the club who pays him. He
doesn't
just
mean
stays
they're not
going to
sign him. They could still be like, all right, we're not going to sign him. He didn't play 40 games, but we're still signing him for 25.
Yeah, but when you're
stuff like that,
when the club's like honorary president or whatever the fuck position he has there now is coming out and saying you will not play 40 games, like
what message does that send to the incoming player who hasn't even, not only has he not played a minute for Bayern at that point, hasn't even had his unveiling press conference yet, and the president is saying you are going back to Chelsea who didn't want you, who were desperate to get rid of you. You're going back there at the end of the year.
I just don't mind whatever he said. And I also think Nicholas Jackson won't have 2 bad weeks because of comments from Uli Hoeneß. I mean, he's going to train and play and whatever. Sporting-wise, does it make sense? I mean, he had decent seasons for Chelsea, decent seasons in Spain?
He had a good couple of months to end of his time in Spain that really stood out. Then Chelsea signed him. Listen, I mean, I'm a Chelsea fan, so I've watched him every week. He has certain abilities and certain traits. He's a willing runner. He comes deep, he gets the ball, he's fast, he runs at players, he causes problems, he gets involved. I won't deny that. And he has scored goals. You know, he scored double figures in 2 back-to-back Premier League seasons. The issue with him is, honestly, he could have easily had back-to-back 20-goal seasons. Easily. The chances that he's missed and misses every week, it's baffling on occasion how he manages to contrive to miss some chances. He's also turned into a little bit of a liability. Chelsea played Newcastle in a must-win, or at the time felt like a must-win game for Champions League qualification. He gets himself sent off because he elbows somebody in the face after half an hour. He then played 1 game after that in the Conference League final, did score with 1. His next appearance after that was as a substitute in the Club World Cup. Within about 5 minutes, he came on and stabbed on someone's tibia and got himself a straight red card then. So 2 red cards in 3 games. Misses chances consistently. He's raw. There's a player there.
I mean, since he doesn't want to play for Chelsea, so
maybe it was all part of the plan.
Yeah, maybe at another club he's behaving a bit better.
I think he's a player who has ability and is raw and does have quality. He's also very different than Harry Kane. He's a different kind of player. He's more likely to run down the channels, run in behind, run at players and dribble at players, which Harry Kane will just come back and try and link others into play. Jackson's a little bit different, but I think Jackson probably needs to play, and he's only going to be backup at Bayern. You know, he's only going to be Harry Kane number 2, but will come on more often than not. Yeah, I don't know. It's a striker. They needed a quality striker, and they've got a player who's played in the top leagues to be backup. So, you know, it's not a bad deal, but like I said, the story about Jackson is not about Jackson. It's about what Uli Hoeneß said about Jackson. And that's not the first time that that's happened, I think, about a player. Other deals that we should mention. Victor Boniface to Werder Bremen on the final day of the transfer window, which came out of nowhere. I mean, he's been on the edge of leaving Leverkusen for a year, hasn't he? Because he almost went to Saudi Arabia and that fell through. Plenty of other clubs were mentioned this transfer window as well, it felt. He had a medical at AC Milan, which he wouldn't admit to, by the way. In his press conference said that whatever's in the media isn't true, blah, 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 the usual spiel. But that, yeah, that deal that fell through, so it goes to Bremen, which I think for Bremen is a really good deal if they can keep him fit.
And keep him interested. I mean, I'm not saying that necessarily players should be full of joy in signing, but I don't know if you did happen to see the picture of him with the Bremen shirt in the stadium. That did not look like a man that was happy to be there.
He's just thinking of all the Saudi money he's missed out on. Dortmund were quite busy towards the end of the transfer window as well. Chukwuemeka, Anselmino and Fabio Silva were all brought in. There were plenty of outgoings as well. Royal to Everton, we mentioned. Xavi Simons went to Tottenham. Looked like he was going to go to Chelsea for most of the window, and then in the end went to Spurs. Luis Openda also left Leipzig. He's gone to Juventus on loan, I think with an option or a mandatory option to buy. Not quite sure. But certainly of what was left at Leipzig, the two best players. So leaves them in a difficult position, you would say. And then Voltimar, of course, to Newcastle. It's a lot of money.
Well, yeah, but they can afford it, so, you know.
I mean, telling Isaac is effectively, there's the money left over from that side of Altamira, to be fair.
It does definitely seem like overall, I do think it's been a poor window for the Bundesliga in general. The Bundesliga has lost a lot of good players.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think it's the quality of players that have left seems to be a lot higher than what it has been in previous years.
Yeah, I would agree. But there have been some interesting signings coming in. Christian Eriksen to Wolfsburg came a little bit out of nowhere. That was done after the end of the deadline. He was a free agent, of course, but clever signing, and also really impressive for Wolfsburg to find the player who looks the most like Maximilian Arnold. Just like a way to fuse them. No one notice if one of them isn't playing.
Also good on free kicks.
Also good on free kicks, yeah. Hamburg with a couple of signings from Arsenal on deadline day. Fabio Vieira and Sambi Lokonga, which could be interesting deals. All in all, German clubs spent €860 million this summer, received 1.06. Neither are records.
Oh, okay.
So they have received more in the past.
That's quite
received
surprising,
more, right? And also spent more as a whole. It does feel like the money was more, certainly the money spent was more, it was shared across the clubs a little bit more. I mean, Bayern signed Luis Diaz, didn't they? But that was only their real outlay in terms of transfer fees when Bischoff and Tarr were free agents and Jackson's only there on loan. Dortmund weren't over the top in terms of how much they spent either. Obviously, Leverkusen come out as the biggest spenders. They had to. They lost a lot of players, had a lot of money coming in, had to replace them and spent close to €200 million. But even if you look at Freiburg, that don't spend that much, they spent over €30 million. Augsburg spent around €25 million, which is quite a lot for them, and they didn't really lose anybody for a particularly high fee. They did sell a few players, but not for massive money.
Köln spent quite a bit as well, especially for a promoted side.
Union at about €18 million, which is probably towards the higher end of what Union have spent since they've been in the Bundesliga in a single transfer window. Mentioned Köln around €25 million. Like I said, it does feel like it's spread out a little bit more. And so that brings an end to this month's episode of the Bundesliga Diaries. Mirko and Richard, thank you as ever.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Don't think that we've forgotten about the Kicktip League, which is into or past its third week now. Yeah, for us, it's... Richard has got a little bit of a lead early on. 7 points clear of both me and Mirko.
But not top, though. I think I'm still, down in fourth?
Down in fourth, because Ebolwoy Stan, with 37 points, has got a lead... 17 points last week.
Yeah, good performance.
2 correct scores, 5 correct results.
Obviously, no one in our league tipped Ten Hag to be the first manager sacked.
Fucking Seoana, man. Seriously, so close. There are a few players who have kind of haven't done any results last week. Come on, guys, get your results in.
Did you tweet one?
Yes.
Oh, we All have right, tweeted about it, enough. Of course.
All right, then.
We take this seriously.
We're on it, mate. Don't worry.
I didn't forget.
Not yet, anyway. We'll be back next month in October for our second episode of the season. Before then, well, the absolute standout fixture is Bayern against Dortmund, isn't it? In the Classica. That's on the 18th of October. The top spiel. Of course it is. Not on Sunday, Amazon. But that will be the one to keep an eye on the most. Mirko, Frankfurt against Bayern on 4th of October at Frankfurt. So, yeah, you got far more luck out of that, haven't you, in recent years than away?
Yeah, home definitely much better.
And don't forget, it's the Bundesliga Diaries derby at the weekend. Union go to Frankfurt this Sunday.
You're going to lose.
Yeah, I know.
But I also said that last year, and yeah. You won, so...
Dortmund-Leipzig also on the 4th of October. Perhaps another one to keep an eye on. But yes, a busy month already, and we hope it stays that way until we're next on in October. Thank you as ever. We'll see you next month.